Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Children's playgrounds are usually places where you hear happy laughter and the squeak of swaying swings. But one church is using their playground to make a point and make a demand that's reaching clear up to the Supreme Court. Here to explain is Michael Peabody, a Los Angeles-based attorney who has gained legal experience representing plaintiffs in workplace accommodation and discrimination cases. Michael, what do we need to know?
Well, in January, the Supreme Court agreed to hear a case involving a church that sued the state of Missouri when the state refused to fund a non-sectarian playground surface as part of a larger grant program. The Trinity Lutheran Church in Columbia, Missouri, it's a small church, wanted to receive funding from a state grant program that would allow it to replace its pea gravel playground surface with a bouncy surface made from recycled tires. And the school would qualify, the church would qualify for that program, except for the fact that it was a church. All other schools could apply for it, and they could receive the funding if they were not religiously based. But if the institution or the organization requesting the funding was religious, then they were denied the funding. The reason for that denial is that Missouri has something called a Blaine Amendment in place, which states that no money shall ever be taken from the public treasury directly or indirectly in aid of any church, sect, or denomination of religion. And those Blaine Amendments exist in the majority of states in the United States at this point. The church sued the state and argued that the playground upgrade had nothing to do with religion and would provide primarily secular benefits for the kids in the neighborhood who use the facility after hours. And the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed the state's denial of that funding because it violated the state's constitution. So the issue has gone all the way up to the Supreme Court, which is going to decide whether or not the church can successfully sue the state for funding for its playground surface.
This is like the same song, second verse. We've been doing shows here on a lot of things that are happening in our world concerning this separation of church and state and also using state monies to do church things. Is this all part of that larger plan you've been talking about all along on these programs?
It is. It's one of the same ideas that when government money is involved, there are always strings attached.
Yes.
And the church is saying, hey, you know, we don't have a lot of money. The playground surface, I believe it's like $10,000 or something. It's a lot of money, and they're saying, look, you know, the state will give the other people the money that just won't give it to churches, so they're discriminating against us. But at the same time, the other organizations that receive the money are not allowed to discriminate. They have to allow everybody to use the facility, whereas the church may someday say, hey, you know, we want to teach our values here on this playground. We want to teach religious values here. We want control of our facility.
Yeah.
And the state may be able to ultimately use this facility, this playground surface, as a vehicle for regulating what happens on it. It's a serious issue because it's tempting to accept the money up front. It's tempting to really want to get it. But as we've seen in a lot of other cases, eventually regulation comes and there are attempts to try to regulate what occurs there. These Blaine Amendments have actually been on the books for more than 140 years, and they've been under attack for a lot of reasons. Even the Supreme Court, when it was deciding a case called Mitchell versus Helms, the dissenting justices, including Rehnquist, Scalia, Thomas, and Kennedy, found that nothing in the Establishment Clause required the exclusion of pervasively sectarian schools from otherwise permissible aid. In fact, the dissenting justices said that the Blaine Amendment doctrine was born from bigotry and should be buried. The reason for the Blaine Amendment initially was to bar state money from going to Catholic institutions. And it really was an anti-Catholic process, but ultimately it's become something that's been supported by a lot of organizations that favor separation of church and state, simply because it avoids the entanglement that I see us headed toward in so many different areas.
You bring up an interesting point here, because we talked on an earlier program about the Johnson Amendment. Now we talk about the Blaine Amendment. These amendments were put in place at a different time under different circumstances, and here they are still sort of limping along. Is it time for us to strike them down, or is it time for us to amend the amendments?
Well, the question always comes down to regulation. What's going to come with the change in the amendment? You know, if you're a taxpayer, you want to make sure that your money is not going to be used for somebody who is going to speak against you or is going to exclude you, right?
Right.
You want to be able to provide your tax dollars to these institutions for the general good of everybody. And if that institution turns around and discriminates in how it's used, then there's reason for concern. I think we've seen the same thing going on in California with their Senate Bill 1146, having to do with the state stepping in and saying, look, you know, religious colleges and universities that receive state funding should not be able to discriminate against people based on sexual orientation. It's state money. It should go equally to everybody. And in those cases, it's only a percentage of students who receive state funding for the state to come in and try to control the whole campus. So when you have a playground or you have any type of surface structure that really takes over, you know, a significant geographical area or a physical area of a facility, you've all of a sudden got a very large area where you could have regulation welcomed, and it's a problem.
Let me ask you a question that was raised recently on Facebook. You and I are Facebook friends, and we like to watch and see what people are saying about religious liberty issues on that social media site. One person, I was in a discussion, very limited because I'm not an expert in this thing. I host this radio program, so I know a little bit about it, but I like to sort of stick my finger in the water every once in a while and wiggle it around and see what kind of waves I can make. One person says, you know, Charles, how can you call discrimination against blacks the same as discriminations against gay and lesbians? That's not discrimination. One is discrimination, one is something else. Are they really different? Is there a difference between discriminating against blacks and discriminating against gay and lesbians?
Well, it has to do with the idea that you have some other characteristic about you that you can't change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And add to that the discrimination against religion.
Yes.
I'm always very careful. I'm very protective of rights against discrimination simply because I know that most things a person will argue that they're born with. And regardless of whether or not that's the actual case, I know there's a lot of debate on the subject.
Yes.
But religion is something a person chooses.
Yes, that's true.
And so if discrimination is, if you say, well, you can discriminate against somebody based on a born characteristic, then all of a sudden that means that the characteristic that you choose, it becomes a choice and actually becomes a second-level protected class. In other words, you're protected less because of your religion than you are because of your race or your sexual orientation or something.
In other words, we weren't born Christian. We may be born black or white, or we may be, well, that's, again, arguably born gay. But as far as religion is concerned,
it's very easy for somebody to discriminate against and say, you know what, you don't get any rights because of your religion. You pick that.
Okay, right.
Okay. Not my fault you chose to have that religion. I need to accommodate you now. And as a person of faith, you understand how innate those characteristics become to you.
Yes.
But if you're not of that faith, it's very hard to understand it. And so I've always been very favorable toward granting accommodation rights to people as much as possible. But when I see accommodation rights being extended into churches and where religious organizations have to suddenly start accommodating beliefs that they find contrary to their own, or lifestyles or characteristics that are incompatible with what they do as part of their mission, it becomes a very serious issue because suddenly you have religion directly up against another characteristic, which is very difficult because if you have, you know, religion and sexual orientation in a fight, sexual orientation would arguably win if it's a characteristic you're born with. And as we see religious freedom and religious exercise rights taking a second tier status, I think we need to be very careful about how willing we are to chip away at the rights of other groups.
We've talked about the playground politics on this program. We've talked about 1146 and other programs. We've talked about politics from the pulpit. Michael Peabody, being a lawyer, if schools and churches and institutions stop taking monies in any form from the government, wouldn't these problems all go away?
Well, I think there always will be problems. There will always be attempts to regulate what occurs. government funding is not the only avenue for regulation, but it is a major avenue.
So if you bake cakes or if you're a photographer, you're going to come up against these issues even though you're not taking money from the government. Is that what I hear you saying?
Exactly. And okay. So there are larger issues at stake here. But when I see an organization or like this, the church in the Pauley case, Trinity Lutheran Church case, really affirmatively going and suing for this type of funding that's been denied on the basis that it violates that state's constitution, and it clearly does, the implication is that the church is willing to welcome that regulation in, and that's troubling to me.
Yes.
Not to mention the fact that if the Trinity Lutheran Church wins this case, it will likely invalidate the Blaine Amendment, and that's really kind of what the agenda behind that case is. It's to say, you know, this amendment that prohibits state funding of religion is an anachronism, and it needs to go away. It's similar to the movements to invalidate the Johnson Amendment by allowing churches to politic. And it opens some doors to a mixture of church and state, especially when it comes to these Blaine Amendment cases that we don't currently have in the states.
Is there any historical evidence to say that this kind of thing doesn't come out too well? Can we look at history for examples of this that actually happened and what happened after that?
In the past, we've had joinders of church and state where the church made the state more so-called religious and ultimately led to persecution being conducted by the state.
Right.
What's happening in the current cases is the government tends to make the churches more secular and forces the churches to abandon their religious distinctive beliefs that could come into conflict with what the state is trying to advance.
Well, this is almost a mirror image, then, of what's happened in the past.
At this stage, it is. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with the next level of activity on these cases. But at this point, the churches are cash-strapped. They need the money. And it's easy for them to sign away a lot of stuff in order to simply survive to the next year. It's like Esau selling his birthright for a pot of soup.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Michael Peabody has been our guest today. He is a workplace litigator and an endless advocate of religious liberty, and he has a website, if you'd like to check that out, www.religiousliberty.tv, religiousliberty.tv. Lots of good stuff there, articles and videos and everything you can look at. And a place to leave comments and look at his blog and whatnot. So that's all at religiousliberty.tv. And, of course, libertymagazine.org is a site where you can listen to these programs again if you'd like to share them with other people. Also, subscribe to Liberty Magazine, which brings these issues to you just constantly. And it lets you see what's happening in the world and keeps you informed, because I see a lot of uninformed comments on social media and from the pulpit and from the pews and from the street. Let's be informed. If we're going to open our mouths, have something really substantial to say. Michael Peabody, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate your words of wisdom.
Thank you.
Listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Michael Peabody, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651 or email us through our website at 3abn.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.